Hello and welcome to Camp Kaiju Monster Movie Reviews. We're your hosts, Vincent Hannum.
And Matt Levine.
And we're talking about all our favorite monster movies, the good, the bad, and the downright campy, and asking if they stand the test of time. Traditional kaiju creature features, space invaders, the supernatural, and everything in between. All strange beasts, welcome here. Camp Kaiju is sponsored by Zach Linder and the Zach Pack, powered by Coldwell Banker Realty. Your source for real estate, home rehab, fixing and flipping for investor clients and residential buyers. Reach out to the Zach Pack today for real estate services. Follow the Zach Pack on social media and contact the Zach Pack for investment opportunities. Links in the bio. These early movies and the one after Ghidorah, Ebera, Horror of the Deep, which also features Mothra, you track the sort of the life cycle of the larva. And their transformation into the adult Mothra throughout those four movies, which now just watching them all back to back to back to back, it's like, oh, these are Mothra movies as much as they are Godzilla movies. Absolutely. Which is really cool to think about. That's yeah, not what especially... I... Sorry, go on.
No, sorry. I was going to say, and I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit more, but I think you're right that Mothra is kind of the hero of this movie. Like, Godzilla is the antagonist, this kind of rampaging machine, and not too much more than that. So we're rooting for Mothra, and she's kind of the symbol for the potential goodness of humanity, I would say, in this movie.
There's something about Mothra that just has so much personality and character. Because in all of those four movies, maybe with the exception of Ebera, I mean, Mothra plays, it's not just a pivotal role being a monster. I mean, like in Ghidorah, Mothra is the one that actually talks to Godzilla and Rodan and convinces them to unite against Ghidorah. There's something just a little bit more humanistic about her that I think naturally makes her more integral to whatever the plot of the movie is, because it's not just, we need to have a story here and then there's this monster. It's like, Mothra is an active character propelling the story as much as any of the human beings.
Right. And I think the Shobijin are that conduit between Mothra and the humans.
Yeah.
So we, in a way, the humans are communicating with Mothra herself, right?
Right.
There's that role the Shobijin play. Some of these movies, it's like there's not one movie. It's two movies. And you can... It like almost doubles the catalog you have to search through.
Yeah. It's a lot of work.
If you really, I know this is not going to make it onto the podcast, or maybe it will.
Maybe.
I'll look like a fool. If you really want to go down a rabbit hole, there's a whole YouTube channel devoted to showing the differences between the US and Japanese cuts of each movie. Ooh. And they like, there's like, it's like a split screen. So it shows all the things. I find it absolutely fascinating, but I'm a huge nerd. So,
something I also want to start watching are the audio commentaries on these films.
Yes.
So that's like a third version of the movie to then consume.
Not kidding. During the pandemic, this is basically what I did. I rewatched every Godzilla movie in order, which I'd never done before. And I pretty much watched all of the commentaries and all the stuff. It was a little crazy, but you know, weren't we all?
You could have been doing worse things.
Yeah.
Your time.
Yes. That seemed like one of the healthier COVID obsessions that you could possibly have.
Good point.
Yeah. So as soon as I got done watching this movie two nights ago, no, it was last night, I saw the audio commentary and I was like, oh, do I just hit play again? Just go back through it? Because I don't want the commentary to distract me from my own, you know, intake of the film. But I am interested and curious.
It's a good commentary.
Who does the commentary? Do you know offhand?
I think that's one that's, if it's a classic media DVD, it's Steve Reifel and Ed Godduchewski, who Steve Reifel wrote. Well, they're the two that wrote that Ishiro Honda book that I hope you get 27 copies of. And they've also done a lot of other Godzilla work over the years, and they've kind of gone in together on a few different commentaries, and it's good stuff.
Awesome. Cool.
That sounds great.
Okay, one more thing. Sorry. So after our conversation, remember last episode we were talking about Kurosawa films, and someone mentioned a movie called The Bad Sleep Well.
Yeah, great movie.
Mm-hmm. I literally found that at a Goodwill 2 days later.
Oh, DVD. Nice.
I haven't watched it yet, but I have it now.
So good. It's so good.
Yeah, amazing. That's one of my favorite movies about like Japan trying to like reckon with like the economic miracle, you know? Like it's sort of like you know, leaping into global capitalism to like compete on the world scale or whatever. That movie is a really fascinating and fairly cynical depiction of like the ambivalence that a lot of Japanese people felt about that. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I can't wait to watch it. Yeah, I was like, I found a diamond here in the rough of Goodwill DVDs.
There's usually one diamond and then a lot of just unwatchable trash. Yeah.
A lot of rough. But, yeah.
Yeah. Some of that stuff can be fun on its own as well, you know? I also watched Son of Frankenstein a couple days ago, which is not... Yeah, I've been wanting to see it for a while, not related to Mothra versus Godzilla at all, but it's a monster movie, and it's really good. I liked it.
I think Vincent and I talked about this once. Have you seen Young Frankenstein?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it's... I feel like I love Son of Frankenstein, but Young Frankenstein sort of ruins several scenes in Son of Frankenstein. So like when Ellen and I watched all like the first three Karloff Frankensteins a few years ago, and like, you know, during that scene with the constable when they're throwing darts, I'm just laughing and Ellen's like, this isn't funny. I'm like, trust me, at some point we'll watch Young Frankenstein and you'll understand.
Yeah, yeah. I know what you mean. That's all I could think about while watching Son of Frankenstein. But, you know, the camp entertainment is there in the original as well, I think, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And you have Basil Rathbone, who's, like, so over the top. I love him.
Yeah. No, I love that movie. And that might be my favorite Bela Lugosi role as Igor.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's his so movie. Good. More than anyone else's.
Yeah.
Like almost maybe to a fault, because the monster starts to get a little bit like one note, you know, he barely has like a character in that movie. But yeah. Bela Lugosi does for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the film where the monster just starts from this point on. He only becomes sort of a henchman to a more meaningful antagonist.
Yeah.
Which is a shame.
It is. And it feels like a total waste of Boris Karloff.
Oh yeah. Especially with Karloff, because no offense to Glenn Strange, who played the monster in a few films. Karloff is Karloff, and he deserves some rich roles.
Agreed. Yeah.
Lon Chaney Jr. also played the monster once. Also wasted. Completely wasted.
As did Bela Lugosi.
Yeah.
And I wish that there was a cut. I know we're talking about the wrong movie here, but basically, like, spoiler alert, in a later movie, Igor's brain ends up in the body of the Frankenstein monster. And then, so that was a like segue for Bela Lugosi to play the Frankenstein monster. But like, nobody remembered that had happened. And apparently, like, all the test audiences, he had dialogue. He talked like Igor, but he was Frankenstein's monster. And it just... like everyone was just laughing the whole time because it just seems so utterly ridiculous. So like their solution was to just cut all of those lines of dialogue. So then it's just unfortunate. It's just this lumbering old Hungarian dude playing the Frankenstein monster.
It's too bad.
Yeah, we've talked about Frankenstein a lot recently on Camp Kaiju, and that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about Frankenstein more soon because Flesh for Frankenstein is one of our upcoming movies in April.
Oh, nice. I've never seen that.
No, me neither.
Me either. About it. I wanted to add it to the list based on like reputation alone, so I hope it doesn't suck. We'll see.
That's not one of the Hammer movies, is it?
No, it's produced by Andy Warhol, although that might be like an in-name only thing. directed by Paul Morrissey, and is known for being like extremely sleazy and having a bunch of gore and nudity and sex and just like really trashy 70s movie.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
Since we're on the subject
of gore and nudity
related to the Universal Monsters.
Oh.
Lon Chaney Jr.'s last movie, maybe? Yeah, what's it called? It's from the 70s.
Isn't it Dracula versus Frankenstein?
It is, from 1971.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Ugh, this movie just looks so cheap and sleazy.
It's a bad one. And I think someone else from that era is in it too, but I can't remember who.
And you know, like Bela Lugosi, of course, famously, his last role barely was in Plan 9 from Outer Space, which is so much fun. I love that movie.
Yeah.
It's terrible, and I love it.
It's one of the best off-screen deaths ever.
Yeah.
Spoilers. I haven't seen Plan 9 yet.
Oh, okay. Don't want to give anything away.
That's maybe my favorite bad movie of all time. Like, it's just irresistible. There's so much passion that went into that movie, even though it's like poorly made every step of the way. I love it.
Yeah. It's, for me, it's either that or The Room. I'm a hardcore The Room fan.
Me too. Troll 2, I love as well. There are lots of good ones.
Nilbog is gobble. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, that part's great.
Oh my God.
Nilbog. Yeah.
Now it's eating. Hey. Okay, I know the quotes more than the movie. I've never seen that either, but
oh, you're in for a treat, man.
I know my education will continue.
Any bad movie made by someone who really thinks they're making a great movie is just always so much fun. Like I Hack Jobs, I mean, whatever, they're a dime a dozen, but like you can tell when people, they're fundamentally wrong, but they fully believe in this product that they're making.
Yeah, I think that's true of The Room too. Like, you can tell Tommy Wiseau was so invested in that, you know.
Yep,
that's why it's so great.
Yeah.
All right,
Vincent, are you always the one that has to edit these? Because you're in for a good one. Okay.
No, yeah, I can't wait. I was listening to, so Ben, Matt and I recorded an episode about The Amazing Colossal Man last year.
Okay.
And I was just revisiting it. I don't often listen to our old stuff, but I was like, oh, that was a good conversation. So
yeah,
there's a lot to be explored there with other movies of his.
A couple of his other titles, King Dinosaur, Earth versus the Spider.
Yeah, that's
Village of the Giants and Empire of the Ants, which maybe is what you were. Yeah. Like you mentioned. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He was also born in Kenosha, Wisconsin, so a fellow Scotty. I didn't even know that.
Hey, no kidding.
Rest in peace, Bert I. Gordon.
AIP also distributed some other movies from Japan and East Asia. Monster from a Prehistoric Planet, The X from Outer Space, and a South Korean kaiju film, maybe the best known, Yongari, Monster from the Deep. Ben, have you ever seen The X from Outer Space?
I have never seen The X from Outer Space. I have seen Frankenstein Conquers the World. I have seen Yongari, Monster from the Deep. And I don't know if I've seen Monster from a Prehistoric Planet unless I've seen it under like a different title.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, The X from Outer Space, if you want like bad campy.
Yeah.
It's worth it.
Wait, is that the one with like the weird chicken?
Yeah.
Oh, I have seen that. Okay. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it's a trip.
I do want bad campy. I will have to watch that as soon as possible.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, it's great to talk about movies that might not stand the test of time. It's like the Jaws the Revenge of Japanese 60s kaiju movies.
Yeah.
Wow. My mind is racing with possibilities right now. Yongari or Yongari sounds really cool too. Is that like pretty easy to find? Is it readily available? Do you know?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, it was out on DVD. I don't know if it was a Shout Factory DVD, but I mean, I know I saw it at some point in the mid-2000s. And I think they did a remake of it at some point.
Yes. Or like a pseudo sequel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's one of those that are you see it in the discourse. It's just, it's out there. Yeah. It's not known.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a fan favorite. I love it. It's just so strange because, you know, I know we'll talk more about this, but this was always my favorite Godzilla movie when I was a kid before I had any idea that there was like an actual community of Godzilla fans and kaiju fans. So I just always loved it. And then to kind of like have that reinforced by like practically everybody was just kind of cool. So I can't tell if like this is the costume's a favorite because the movie is so good or like, but either way, it's just like a perfect storm of things, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think in general, the special effects here maybe are better than anything else up to this point that I've seen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad you put in the whole Oxbury thing in the notes. Because fun trivia about that. But yeah, I mean, that's it looks great.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but yeah, like just I feel like the cinematographer for these early 60s movies, I can't remember his name, Hajime Koizumi.
Yeah.
Like he, to me, he might be the real MVP of these movies because they just look so beautiful and fantastic to me.
I agree. There's far, yeah, we'll get into it.
Yeah.
I like that you said that the confrontation with the military does not go as planned. I would add it does go as should be expected, though, because these things never work.
I love the moment when they're trying to electrocute Godzilla and it seems to be working. And they're like, one of the military commanders is like, oh, like push up the voltage. And then like one of the soldiers is like, it can't take it anymore. It's at its limit. And then one of the like military commanders is like, push it higher or whatever. And they do it. And then like, of course it doesn't kill Godzilla. Like you would think they would know that by now, you know?
Yeah.
And they probably destroyed their whole like electrical infrastructure trying to do so.
The entire countryside is just out of, no, there's no power for the next 5 years or something.
Yeah. And that's a good point that they would like, you know, pretty drastically deviate from this template, starting with Ghidorah and like, maybe not always for the better with all the like aliens that come into play later on, but yeah, I
don't know, the alien cockroaches that plan to take over the world by creating a Godzilla amusement park. I think that's a great idea. That's
or the alien gorillas trying to take over the world with robot Godzilla.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Those alien gods, or yeah, alien gorillas, man, terrible.
Yeah. Speaking of which, something that I had never put two and two together before until I watched these two movies back to back. In the very first movie, those the sailors that are rescued and they turned out to have no radiation effects whatsoever, and they talk about in the Japanese subtitle version drinking that red juice, and then in this movie, as soon as our trio of protagonists get there, they're all given red drink to consume. I thought that was just a nice little bit of continuity. That's just sort of, it's not dwelled upon, but it's there between the two.
Yeah, I agree. And I think after they drink that juice, the chief on Infant Island even says the evil has been banished. So that's, you know, an interesting connection in itself as well.
Yeah.
In the beginning of the film, there's a lot of, like, trust the gods, like they'll protect you, because the fishermen are scared to go out and get the egg. But some of the businessmen are like, the gods will protect you. And it's just another great dichotomy, I feel like, between the Japanese who still believe in the gods and these new Japanese characters whose god is money.
One thing that I feel like is important to mention, and I don't know if it should be in the campy category, really, but the natives who were like, you know, pretty offensive in Mothra with like the blackface and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I don't think I have to say pretty there. They were very offensive. You know, they're better this time around. They don't have the dark makeup. In fact, they have like bright red makeup, which is like just totally not trying to be realistic at all, which I think is preferable.
Yep.
It's still a little bit like, you know, when we see their ceremony and like all the like vaguely exotic dancers, it's still like, ooh, I don't know how I feel about this. But
yeah,
it is better than Mothra, so I will say that.
Again, I'm pretty sure it's the influence of that ship captain that washed ashore and became their chief. Like, he's trying to move them into more tolerant perspectives.
I could see that. Yeah, that's a compelling backstory.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know if that's campy, but I figured I should say that before we wrap up the episode.
For sure. Yeah, thank you. I noticed it, too.
So are either of you Lord of the Rings fans, like the movies? Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
So Skeleturtle is basically the Figwit of Godzilla movies. Figwit was that character that was played by one of the dudes from Flight of the Conchords. And he's in the first movie as an elf. And like he's in this one shot next to Frodo, and he's like super prominent, and everyone was like really drawn to him. So Figwit stands for Frodo is great. Who is that?
That's amazing.
Wow.
I'm that looking him up right now. Yep, there he is. Never knew who that guy was.
Yeah, it's Brett McKenzie from Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah.
Yep. Wow. Yeah. All right. We'll look up Skeleturtle. It's got a backstory. Skeleturtle's featured in a few comics.
Mike, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I love this deep lore, man. It's good to know.